Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We are doing this every Tuesday. They need to come hang out with Mooch and the missus.
That is called fascism. Okay, he is a fascist leader.
He's his own worst enemy. He's creating his own problems. You know, he's like one of those people who can't get out of their own way.
I don't want to be one of those Trump haters.
Okay,
I just want to make...
Everyone is a product of their upbringing and their personal loyalties. I'm a human being, and I probably got overtaken by the excitement of him winning.
The minute you called me to say, boom, as soon as I got that, boom, I called you right back.
Anyway, you lose the argument. All the ladies out there.
My mother's like, why are you cursing so much? I'm like, Ma... Where do you think I learned it from?
We do this podcast. I go into the city. We have dinners together or we'll travel. We spend time to be together as a couple and a family and as business partners. And I feel like it really helps us.
You still love me?
I do.
Okay,
do you still love me?
Very much.
Okay, I don't know if you have, let's
very much my liberal, hot wife.
Oh my God. I feel like I'm watching the facts of life.
No, it's like a 70s time capsule introduction to Trump. I can feel the pimples growing back on my forehead right now and the peach fuzz over my lip, but it's fine. Go ahead.
Oh, my God. Okay. So I came into the studio. You're in L.A. Boo-hoo to you. I wish I was there, but I'm in New York. It's gray as your hair without dye. And
oh, my God. That's how we're starting the podcast?
Yeah. Dying shade.
And we have a special guest in the studio with us to try to help us talk about something other than Trump insanity. So, hi, Jason. We have Jason Lanyard here. He's
Hello.
The founder of Lanyard Grandelli Team. It's a top-notch real estate firm. I think you're based in Manhattan, correct? Yeah. So, in the best market in the world, maybe.
The most important.
And so we're going to have a little bit of a conversation with him about some of the stuff going on in the real estate market. And we can also discuss some of the Trump intrigue with him, because he's admitted that he's even into politics sort of now, being that Trump is so crazy and has all of our attention. So where should we begin? Do you want to talk about some of these news stories, Anthony? I mean, I thought you would find the one interesting about the
McMulvaney.
I'm on a good roll.
Yeah, so what's Mulvaney saying now?
He's
basically got on his knees in front of America and had a Catholic confession, but that's fine. So what's he saying now?
What does that mean?
Taking it all back, right? He basically said they did a quid pro quo. They're stuffing unauthorized conversations into the wrong servers, and they were holding back aid to the Ukrainians. That's what he said on Thursday.
Oh, see, I stopped watching things because I just can't even deal with it anymore. I can't keep up. I have bags under my eyes. All right. But now there's supposedly, I guess because he did that, there's some talk that there might be a replacement in the works. This guy that I've never heard his name before. You probably have Pat Cipollone or?
Yeah.
How do you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, white. Cipollone means
Cipollone.
Onion in Italian, by the way.
Pat Onion,
like the satire magazine Onion. Okay, that'll be fun. Pat Onion will replace Mick Mulvaney. So, but, you know, I mean, he's the White House general counsel right now. Not a bad idea, actually, because Trump is in so much trouble. He's going to need somebody like that. So, but the problem is Trump won't listen to him, so.
I want to bring you into the loop.
Weirder and worse.
Oh, turn your mic on. Is your mic on?
I thought it was.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
They tried a general already. Why not try another attorney? I mean.
Well, the funny part about this, I don't even know why we're discussing a chief of staff for him, because he doesn't listen to anybody. So it could be me or Papa Smurf. Like, it could be anybody. It doesn't even matter because he doesn't listen to them. You know what I mean? Basically, they're just somebody that's covering for him. I don't know, within the White House and then occasionally in a press junket.
Of course.
Right?
But
it's not really a counselor. He doesn't listen to them.
All your years in real estate, you ever run into him?
No.
Donald Trump?
No. And
look at you.
It's funny because I've sold in a bunch of the Trump buildings, and every time it's happened, it's been like, I want to buy here despite the fact that, and this is years before the election, and now, you know, many buildings have already removed his name.
They have to take the name down. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like...
Not have to. Right. I mean, the owners have gotten together and decided to do this because it literally was devaluating their property. Forget all the emotional, you know, corollaries to that, that they felt living in these buildings. They actually didn't want people perceiving their properties as defective.
Oh, my God.
It's just pragmatic real estate, actually.
That's
but
the craziest thing.
I think it's such an important signifier of what this trickle-down impact is upon submarkets.
Well, the crazy thing is that he has touched every single thing in life. Like, you can't go anywhere. I was driving the other day, and I'm passing Trump Links, you know, in Queens or whatever it is. And I'm thinking, oh, my, I can't go anywhere without driving by or seeing something referring to him. Like, he's taken over my life. And he literally has his finger in every pie, every single, and everything. And I just don't think, it's such a conflict of interest as a president.
His industry was never really real estate after the first 15 years anyway. It's always been brand.
Right. It's all about brand.
His only goal is to remain talked about. So, you know.
What the heck are you doing in that hotel room? Are you whipping people or what is that? Or playing ping pong or something?
No, I was making myself a little hotel smoothie. Are you jealous that I'm in the Beverly Hills Hotel? You could be jealous. It's fine.
I am, yeah. Is it nice weather?
I made myself, it's like a California smoothie that I'm trying to eat. No, the weather is a little bit cloudy right now. It's supposed to burn off and over to speak, and then I'm flying out of here to Florida. So
thanks for the agenda.
So let's talk a little bit about the real estate market while we have the real estate guru on the phone. So the real estate market in New York, devastated, medium, getting better. Where are we right now?
Well, the general statement would be it's a very, very soft market. It's one of the worst markets some people have ever seen. I'm in the business 15 years, and it's not the worst market in terms of what I've seen price-wise. It's the worst in terms of its confusion factor. There's a lack of consumer confidence and a constant, like, sort of...
Also Trump-related.
Well, it's related to general news. Like, if you asked me maybe 18 months ago what was the problem with the market, I would have said the GOP tax code because it really screwed us with the SALT mm-hmm. deductions, mm-hmm. but that would have been localized. Right,
so let's explain that, Jason. I think that's important for people. We've got listeners from all over the place. So the GOP tax code basically eliminated the state and local income taxes. So
for no reason whatsoever. Basically, as part of the you know, tenets of this code, you previously, prior to the enactment, you were able to deduct up to $750,000 worth of your mortgage interest, depending on whatever that was at your given time, and also all of your taxes, all of your maintenance if you were an investor and you didn't live in the property because it was a tax deduction to maintain and pay the taxes. That all went out. With the code such that we capped it at $10,000. And it was done on purpose to disadvantage, to disproportionately disadvantage the East Coasters, because for us, $10,000, that's not even a $1 million property. I mean, you could own a $2 million property and barely scratch, you know, 40% of that for mm-hmm. your deduction now. So it really impacted people's abilities to carry certain properties with the tax deduction. And I'll repeat, it was totally unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not really connected to the rest of the code itself, but it was like a political maneuver to piss us off.
Well, yeah, but I think what they were trying to do, frankly, they're trying to drive migration out of the blue states, and they're trying to punish blue states, basically, for not voting Republican. That's basically what happened.
I totally read that at the time, and I don't deny that's the case, but I'm not sure, like, almost 2 years later, if that has ended up the result, because there are so many factors already now, I think, impacting migrations. Anthony, don't you think that... You know,
yes, I agree with that.
That maybe that could have been the case if they didn't do any number of other horrible things in the last 2 years that are making other economic factors too significant for the average American. I mean, the New York market has always been a different market in terms of, like, its sublevels and its price points. You know, our average purchase here, I think the median is something like in the $900,000. You know, this is not the rest of America. But that doesn't mean that every single price point isn't impacted by what's going on. And that's what I'm referring to about the consumer confidence. Like,
so how does it recover in your mind? Like, I mean, I'm assuming that you believe that New York is a vibrant long-term market, right? So
yes.
What would cause the recovery?
Well, I'm already seeing, I think, an impact right now, and it's the age-old, you know, adage of the foreign investor. Anyone with cash, anyone with a bird's-eye view from afar who sees the market cycle, which is give or take about 7 years, depending on who you ask, knows that this down market cannot be forever, and also it will rebound. You know, one of the things that New York is very, very easy to show is where the peaks are. So we last had a peak pricing of 2015, second quarter, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look in all the prime places where everyone used to talk about, West Chelsea by the High Line, Upper West Side by Lincoln Center, you know, the West Village of always, there's about, depending on where you're looking, maybe 10 or 15% reduction from that peak pricing, which is a very significant metric. My point is, if you're seeing it that way and you believe it will rebound, it's up to you to obviously have that confidence, but you're going to make 10 or 15% immediately when you buy now. Mm-hmm. That's to say nothing of the next peak, which could be as late as 2022 or 3, based on both cycles in my experience. But my point is, it's a cyclical thing. So what happens when the foreigners come in? They start buying with cash. All my colleagues are noticing that suddenly, like 4 years ago, we would never, in the peak of the market, everyone is financing, because that's what everyone does. They leverage everything they can to make what they need. And it's not just investors then. It's like families having babies and kids and divorces, life cycles, mm-hmm. you know? Whereas right now, we have people buying cash because it's a currency play from abroad, mm-hmm. you see? And also, people are seeing the real estate market as potentially more solid than the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. If you have the cash, you know, what I did in 2009 and 10 were a lot of deals. I was a little bit more novice then with investors and clients who clearly were a bit older than I am and understood the markets, and they knew what was going to happen before I did as a professional because they'd seen it before.
Right, just, you know, life experience.
Yeah, right. So the biggest thing I'm seeing is a lot of parents buying condos for their kids in cash.
Oh, that must be nice.
Well, I mean,
right? All right, you know, so let's say that we were going to buy
the parents
a condo
who love their kids,
one...
dear, not everybody. So...
Oh my God!
Oh, so this is a public service message from our children. We do love you. So
even
where
if
we
can't buy you a condo,
right? But where are we buying you that? Assuming that we could buy you that condo, and where are we buying that condo?
Well, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. Are you trying to find a space in the prime areas and take advantage of that 10 or 15%
well,
I just described?
Say,
or
are
you trying to
have
bank
a young,
on the future
of
a different
young 24-year-old actress that needs to be in a swank area? Where would you buy it?
Let's just say,
Let me just consult my database of popular buildings for mistresses. I'll get right back
to you.
Oh my
God! Oh my God! Well, if he has a 24-year-old mistress, God help him and her.
No,
so,
it's my daughter. What? God forbid! Oh my God! If Amelia listens to this, she's gonna whack me.
No,
with
actually,
don't
to
worry.
Be serious,
Amelia never listens to this, honey.
That's true. It's not cool enough for Amelia.
Down service on line one.
Hello?
What's that?
Oh, I thought you hung up on us.
You know, you can laugh about that. But...
No, I'm listening. This is it's a fascinating conversation.
No,
I'm not
honestly,
talking about Trump,
Jason brought that up because that's probably a thing that actually goes on, right?
It is. So I'm going to tell you a really good anecdote. So I've been
so this is your daily dose of having no faith in humanity anymore. Let's tell us all about the mistress condos. No, let's go.
Hold on,
No, tell us what goes on in real life.
So
alone.
I do a lot of business with foreign investors from India. It's just where I have a client base, and I've gone back and forth to Mumbai and other cities for about a decade. One of their popular things, which is A, cultural, and B, also just related to currency, a lot of clients will buy their kids apartments when they're born, or like two or three. And sometimes it'll be a funny story, like, I want to buy an apartment near Columbia. Oh, wait, so where your daughter or son will go maybe in 20 years or
That's
18
crazy.
Years?
Yeah.
But the answer I tell you with a straight face is yes, because they see it as an investment. Just like, you know, I was born in the mid 70s and my grandfather bought me a life insurance policy. That was
a CD. My grandparents bought me a CD.
I'm Jewish. We're neurotic. So,
okay, right.
You know, why buy a CD when at least you can definitely assume you'll eventually die?
Right.
So I think that what's happening, though, when I see these parents buying for their kids is that it's more like, yes, I want to buy where I know they could live. But it's more of a sentimental way to state, not only have I bought you something for your future, but it's a physical, like, asset. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in high school, maybe, you know, when we stop renting it out, we might be able to visit it and you can tell your friends, oh, I saw my condo in New York. You know, and it's not like...
So this is a cultural thing.
It's not a... No, but I'm trying to say it's not a snobby thing. It's just really pragmatic and, if I can be soft for a moment, very emotional investing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a way to say I've actually invested in the infrastructure of my children's future.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Because the condos are liquid.
It's a pretty cool idea.
It is, right?
So what area of the city would we buy my...
Where he's buying
our 24-year-old daughter. You're good. Whatever.
Okay. Well, I have to, as a rule, make a shout out to the Nomad neighborhood, because that's where my business partner and I are selling one of the top new condos there called Rose Hill. But honestly, Nomad is the next downtown.
So I'm confused because I'm like old now. Where's Nomad?
Okay. Well,
Anthony, do you know?
I think it's north of Madison. I don't know,
correct.
North of Madison Square,
correct.
Maybe?
He is correct.
Okay.
Probably right by the Rose Hotel, the Rose Bar, Gramercy Park, that area?
Actually,
or no?
I didn't know this until the project came on board for us, that Rose Hill is the term for this area of, well, now right. We call it North of Madison Square Park, but Rose Hill, I think, originated from the late 19th century, and it refers to a farm.
Okay.
That mm-hmm. was privately owned. I forget the name of the owner. But, you know, as is mm-hmm. often the case with real estate, some real estate pundit gets the idea that something is exciting, gives a name to it, and the marketing takes off. And
that's the thing. It's branding again, right?
Right. But I think the neighborhood branding is a very specific comment because, for example, when I got to the city 22 years ago, I'm dating myself now, it was very, very cool to go out in the meatpacking district.
Yeah,
you know,
that was our thing.
Do you know
our
why
generation.
It was called that? Because
that used to
it
be where,
was
right.
the meatpacking district
right.
where the meat was packed.
Right.
I mean, I used to go to clubs that, honestly,
they were like warehouses.
Oh yeah,
back in the day.
Yeah. And let me be honest, I'm gay, and heterosexuals would not have touched this place 22 years ago. Of course, 5 or 7 years later, it was the coolest spots of all time, and that's a separate conversation mm-hmm. about how sort of gay culture changes a dynamic. But meatpacking was a pejorative. It was not like now.
Right, it's like,
when you think
ew.
Meatpacking, you right. think Diane von Furstenberg,
right.
Standard.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in that generation of people that was going out. Oh, you're going to meatpacking? We're going
course.
To meatpacking.
Of
yeah,
course.
That was always what we were doing. Yeah.
Of course.
Right.
So guess what? Nomad is... That's
so now that's the new the Nomad
north,
is the
north
new
north of Madison Square Park
packing.
Is Nomad.
But so what's the culture of Nomad?
Are they priced attractively because of the current real estate market? Or
I don't understand the question. What do you mean?
No, meaning that so you said the market's a little soft. It's a brand new building. Is it priced attractively given the market softness?
Yes.
Or because it's a brand new building, is it have a premium?
Both questions have the answer of yes, which is that the new development market is always at the top of the heap. It's always the blue
right,
chip.
Right, okay, that makes sense, but it's still priced in a way where it's competitive.
Yes, competitive compared to what, though? Compared to other new developments. You can get a really, really great two-bedroom apartment for only $2,100 a square foot in Nomad. I mean, at the height of peak pricing in 2015 in more prime neighborhoods, West Village, Chelsea, we're talking about $3,000 a square foot as the asking.
I'm just amazed that anyone can even afford to live in New York, thinking of these prices and like what people actually make. It's crazy. I can't believe it. And it's such a shame. It's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Most people pay these extreme rent prices, and that's like a mortgage payment, but they don't have the down payment money. So they spend their whole life renting at these exorbitant prices. It's crazy.
Yeah, but then you have stories pre-peak pricing where 15 Central Park West, now considered the limestone Jesus is how it's referred to, because it's the first.
Is it really?
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah, 15 CPW. I remember that was so.
Because it's where people flipped for 40% returns. I mean, we can all make fun of or be jealous of the $10 million owner that was able to flip for $14 million, but that's the reason this conversation is taking place. Because if Nomad is the next whatever, and by whatever I mean downtown hub, because I think it is, it's already becoming that because of the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the restaurant scene, the hotel scene, the foreigners, it's got this really vibrant cultural thing going on that the West Village in Chelsea had about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Tribeca too, from a more sort of restaurant aspect. But Nomad is just like, if you buy a $2,100 a foot and you can resell it later for $2,400 a foot, yeah, you scrounged to make that 80% financing
because
it was worth it. That's
just smart investing.
So, you know, so I think part of the fun of my job is seeing where these cycles impact like individual human people.
And all the psychology going into making a real estate investment, right? There's so much psychology, right?
Yes, so much psychology.
On a place like 15 Central Park West, though, those entry prices 10 or so years ago, that proved to be a good buy for people, right? I mean, that was a good...
Anthony, right, it was one of the best buys of all time, I believe.
You don't call it the limestone Jesus for nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't make that up.
Yeah, they appreciate it a lot.
Yeah. Right.
Like it. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
All right. Well...
So let me ask you a question. We have a lot of young people that are, you know, even though we're not that cool to our children, we have a lot of young people that actually listen to the podcast. So can you tell us a little bit about your early career and how you got started, how you think about, you know, the business and you know, some of the ups and downs that you've had?
Well, I know you're also a musician, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. So I hate to tell this story, but I often get asked, so I will. I'm a cliche. I was a musical theater performer. I went to conservatory after college. I got an extremely useful degree in Slavic literature from Princeton. And then I went to the Royal
Me
Academy.
Too.
Yes.
I'm a Slavic PhD. Okay, keep going.
Wait, you are, Anthony?
No.
No, I'm making a joke. I basically can barely speak English, according to my wife. I mean, come on, I'm making a joke.
You're such a polymath. Honestly, for a second, I thought it was possible.
He is a polymath. He's a big time nerd. So he's not great in languages, though.
Oh well.
He's nerdier than people. Given my Guido exoskeleton, I'm nerdier than people think. I'm basically a Jewish rabbi on the inside with like a Guido exoskeleton. But okay, keep going.
There is nothing Guido about you, except the fact that you use the word to describe yourself.
And his name is Guido-ish. But either way, he's definitely not a Guido.
Well, let me just put it this way.
My husband. You have a husband?
My wife's first husband was also named Anthony, so I'm Anthony 2.0 in her life.
Ooh.
Okay, keep going. Sorry.
Oh, well,
back to this origin story. This is like Superman's origin story, guy.
If only. I was an actor, and I was a success as an actor, but it's very difficult in between, obviously, gigs to pay your rent. And truthfully, I think me being a bit of a, you know, Ivy League grad, it was really hard for me to make ends meet. And I was an SAT tutor. I was a bartender.
Everything. To scrape together the money, right?
I had so many jobs,
yeah.
But I literally never scraped the money together. I mean, I scraped something, I don't know if it was called money. And my parents, I don't come from like well-to-do parents, and honestly, it was ruining their lives financially. And I actually exited the theater kicking and screaming. It was the year I got my real estate license, was a real low for me, and I did it under duress. But I had a friend who was also an actor, and he was making like $100,000 renting apartments, which to me in 2005, I thought that was like $1 million.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I think it's double what I had ever made in any given year back then. And so I said, okay, fine. I got my license. I started renting apartments. It would never have occurred to me that I would ever have this job a year from now, or that I would ever sell apartments, because rentals, you get a check every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you rent an apartment, it takes 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even go into the sales market for 2 years because it took 6 months to wait for a commission. I didn't have that luxury. So my career was a bit of a slow burn at first, but then it exploded. So then once I got into the sales market, I saw the different, you know, different factors that sort of go into the real estate market. And real estate actually is a lot of different people experience success in real estate. Some because they have a lot of connections, some because they're smart.
Aunt, whatever you're doing, stop. Sit still.
What am I doing?
dragging their testicles on the floor.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, all right.
You're twisting and turning, and the phone is, like, making noise and stuff.
Okay, geez, I'm sorry. I'm just sitting here in the chair. Go ahead.
The mooch is in the house.
Deirdre can attest, I'm not dragging my testicles on
the floor. No, not right now. Maybe later.
No. It would seem to be inappropriate conduct.
It's not. It's only 10 a.m. We can't do that.
I've been known to do that from time to time. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, anyway, so I started selling apartments. But what's interesting is because I had rented apartments for so long and I understood the rental market, I later would become a bit of an investment expert because the luxurious brokers wouldn't be able to answer the questions of, oh, this is the cap rate. This is how you're going to be able to absorb the, you know, the rental on this. And the rental market is always very different from the sales market. So I formed the partnership that I'm in now with my partner, Nicole Grandelli, in 2008.
A nice Italian girl.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And she would she would definitely tell you that her Italian influence is simpatico with my Jewish upbringing. Although
it's very similar.
She would insist it's less neurotic.
Slightly.
I would agree that it's less neurotic, maybe less efficient. Separate conversation.
Equal in guilt from parents, especially mothers.
It's definitely less efficient, and it's way more dramatic in some ways.
It is. It is. And actually, my boyfriend is also Italian, and honestly, I feel like the Italians are all around me, and it's not fair.
You're surrounded?
Yes.
Well, the food's got to be great. I mean, come on.
It's right? great, but I'm a vegetarian, so it's like, you know,
eggplant, baby.
I know, there's only so much eggplant.
I know, I know.
Does your boyfriend cook, though, at least, or no?
We've cooked once. We've cooked once. We've been together 11 months. Cooked but, once. You know, so it was very, very good. It was very
Jewish
good.
Italian. Yeah, it's like me. I know how to make toast.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to cook.
I do not know
how to cook. One time
maybe
he...
frozen waffles, according to my son.
No, one time I was making soup, and he used the hand... like mixer to actually, you know, break down the butternut squash that I was making the soup out of, and he thought he was like Ina Garten.
I thought it was Galvin Gourmet.
He's like, did you see how I mixed that soup? I was like, yeah, and you scraped the entire bottom of my pot.
I thought we were gonna have a food channel, not a food show, like an entire channel after I mixed the soup.
I myself am domestically challenged, so we were cooking in my kitchen, and he was making meatloaf. With, I should say, in
meatloaf,
absolute,
you're a vegetarian.
I know, this is how great he is. We made it out of beyond...
oh, beyond
plant-based meat, which truthfully has saved my life. So he was
tastes pretty good, actually. My brother made me one of those.
I'm a huge fan, actually.
Yeah, brother's a vegan, and so he brings all his
Yeah, but he knows how to cook that stuff, so it tastes amazing. Actually, it was very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was trying to give me a role in the cooking, which by role I mean stir this and try to not talk as much. And so I was able to identify something as a whisk.
Yes.
And that was the highlight of my experience.
Oh, okay. So you know about whisks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get that out.
So you could sell me a place and I could teach you about the kitchen.
If only I could learn.
Oh. Yeah, if you don't want to.
No.
You don't need to. That's the thing.
No.
Living in New York, you could just eat out every night.
No, actually, I would love to, truthfully.
Oh, really?
Like, no, I think
it's fun. It's
domestication is one of those, you know, human qualities I really want to understand someday because I want to have kids. So I don't really feel like I need to cook, but I feel like I want to know how.
Like if you needed to, or if you felt like it.
What if one day suddenly all the delivery services are not operating, the boyfriend or the husband's away, and I have to cook for a 2-year-old child?
You got to call me. I'll help you.
No. You take frozen waffles out, and you get whipped cream, and you spray the whipped cream on their face so they laugh, and then you stuff the waffles in them.
What food group is the frozen waffles?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's the 2-year-old food group. I think it actually says it right on the box. It says, this is for a 2-year-old.
Oh, my God. And that goes along with buttered pasta and chicken fingers.
Which is the main reason why my wife will never leave me with these kids longer than like 15 minutes. It's literally like a timer goes off. It's like an egg timer goes off.
Well, I know they wouldn't be fed. They would be like malnourished by the time you brought them back if it was like a weekend or something.
Well, my idea of fruit is fruit by the foot or Fruit Loops. That's my idea of a balanced diet. Mm-hmm. But look, I mean, you know, we're all different. But
no underwear, no thong.
Oh my God.
That's the best one.
Go back because I'm curious about
this. No underwear, no thong.
Do you remember what that was referenced to?
Yes, you said if you were walking around with a barrel and suspenders, no underwear, no thong, would I still be married to you?
I said I just wanted to know if I was impoverished tomorrow and I had a barrel with suspenders.
That's what I just said.
No underwear or thong. Yeah.
I just said that.
All right.
No underwear, no thong. I slather it on.
I just don't know if you still love me, but I mean, I was curious. You know, but let's go back.
What's the make on the barrel that you're wearing? Who's the designer?
Is it Jack Daniel's whiskey barrel?
We have only one barrel in the house. We went down to Jack Daniel's about 6 years ago and bought ourselves a barrel of Jack Daniel's whiskey. So if you and your boyfriend like Jack Daniel's, we can drop off plenty.
We can send you some.
Old number seven.
Yep.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
But the question I have is like a little bit more of a business question, if you don't mind. Your trade, you have a delicate balance because your client, I guess, is the person you're selling to, but your clients in some ways are the people that are buying, right? Because, you know, you've got a person comes to you and says, okay, I want to buy this. You're getting paid by the seller. So how do you manage that from a quote-unquote brokerage perspective? Like, how do you think about that?
I actually think that's not a complicated answer beyond one of integrity. And the other aspect is I've made a name for myself as really a profit specialist. The tagline, if you go on our website, lanyardgrandelli.com.
I was going to give you the plug in.
Is $100 million in profit, because after years of watching brokers brag about selling this much volume, and I could tell you how much volume I've sold, it's several hundred million, but I've made $100 million in profit for my clients. So my point is, if you're representing the buyer or the seller, truthfully, because a good buy is a good buy, that's the thing. A meeting of the minds is always a good buy. If you're able to choose the right product,
and heavy breathing. Do you guys hear this? Do you hear this?
Well, now I think he's rubbing against the carpet.
Oh, my God. I must have the most
Do you have an itch on your nose or something that you're rubbing on the floor?
No, I must have the most sensitive. This is like, I feel like I'm in like a sound studio with the stupid phone. Okay,
need to go back and listen to this after. You were literally like,
like. Can you talk about sex at some point?
Okay, I'm holding my breath.
We can even hear you holding your breath. Okay. I'm sorry. What were
Mooch?
We Aunt?
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Okay, I'm sorry. Now I interrupted your choo-choo train of thought.
Right? I want to go back because he was literally giving a beautiful rendition of how you manage a conflict of interest, which I think is very important in every business.
That is true. So I am always paid by the seller no matter what. The commission always comes from the sale side. But the only way for a successful transaction is for, usually in New York City, for two brokers to be participating. So if I'm able to source on the buy side the right purchase, which may happen to be, for example, this condo we're selling, Rose Hill, if it's a competitive price and it's $100 a foot less than the neighbor and it's designed in a superior fashion, and of all the new developments in the area, we are expecting it to be the most profitable venture upon resale in the future, then I've just answered the question for you, meaning that I can represent the developer, which I don't actually even do in this project. My business partner does, but the point is that I don't even have a fiduciary relationship, and I'm promoting it so aggressively because it is the best buy, and our clients are happy. And by the way, when you have a new development and you're able to raise the prices while it's being sold, which is really the name of the game with, you know, strategic marketing of a new condominium, it can take 2 years for a condominium to sell. In this case, I think it'll take less than a year. But if you're able to raise prices, even in a down market, you do the math there. The price increase is part of the profit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not everybody gets that. In fact, in this current landscape, Anthony, there are buildings that are not selling. There's one actually called One Manhattan Square that just went to a rent-to-buy scenario because only 25% of the building's 800-plus units had sold.
Wow.
So the building has effectively become a rental, and it is no longer a profitable venture.
Oh, my God. That sucks for the builder.
Listen, real estate is a gamble. It's always a risk, and it's always based on timing. And, you know, the first person to get there isn't always the best because they're taking the biggest, you know, risk. The last person to get there is usually not, is the least profitable because they
paid the most for the
You're exactly right. Pay the most for the land.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, the project we're working on was capitalized a few years ago. So they correctly foresaw the explosion of, you know, culture and energy in the Nomad area. And they correctly, in this case, hired Setra Ruddy to design the building in a very Art Deco fashion. So it actually looks, with these chevrons on the exterior, it looks like it could have easily come about just a few years after the Empire State, which is nice because, you know, with lots of new product, how do you differentiate it beyond anything else
but
its appearance?
And everything is always so modern now.
I know.
And you need to differentiate because it's the same old stuff. And yeah, I got to check out that building.
I think if the architects had heard you say that, they would be so relieved because that's so much of why I think it's such a beautiful project. And why, I, by the way, I feel this way about a lot of New York projects that try to really harken back to, you know, a former time, because the glass structure really is almost like a monolith at this point. And glass is beautiful, and from the interior, your view is lovely. But as the building ages, how do you differentiate to your resale buyer?
I don't know. I mean, I look at all the buildings on Park and just on the Upper West Side, and all of the old architecture, and everything was done by hand, and it's so beautiful. And then it'll be next to a building that was done in like the 50s or 60s. Mm-hmm. And Anthony and I always say, like, who decided that that was more attractive than this ornate, hand-carved, you know, face on this building?
People make bad choices, and real estate design can affect its, you know, appreciation in perpetuity. Not just that, but the desirability of living there. Like,
well, I mean, I know there's everybody has different taste. You know, like we were saying before, we have a place.
There are some great glass towers, by the way. I'm
there
not
are, but
aligning.
Like you need to have variety in life, just like with everything. You know, you don't want everything to look exactly the same. And so, different things appeal to different people.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're in a glass tower, like I think if you bought at 157, which is really, you know, where Billionaires Row started on 57th Street, that is where a glass tower shines because it literally rises up from the ground in a concrete jungle of many pre-war apartments. A lot of the pre-war buildings in Midtown are very tall by pre-war standards. So then you get this extremely high elevation, scores of feet above the rest of the pre-war. So in that context, I think being a glass tower is quite nice because you're a contrast to the older buildings.
Right.
But then when you're
right,
trying...
Right, but then you got to mix it up. You got to, right?
Well, the problem, too, is that...
Breathing, you know, again.
I'm so convinced there's something else going on.
No, me too. Wasn't he breathing again?
You might want to, like, you know...
Just put it on mute. Do you have mute?
I'm going to try to put it on mute now. You guys are, like, so rude. It's, like, unbelievable. Hold on.
Okay. You know what? But then...
Anthony, between you and me, I don't mind. You can keep making lots of noises. But your wife doesn't seem to be thrilled about it.
I gotta tell you, it's, like, unbelievable. Go ahead. Keep going.
Well, we're just talking about
what I find
variety
in real estate is that a lot of people, especially in recent years when the condo sort of craze is, you know, well beyond its first decade, there's such an appreciation for the buildings that feel like buildings that are New York buildings. You mm-hmm. know, like what people never mention when they talk about real estate is like what attracts usually people to a particular area is its provenance, its history culturally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lived in the East Village when I first moved to the city 22 years ago, and it was the late 90s. No one was willing to live east of 2nd Avenue back then. I was considered extremely risque, especially for an Ivy League graduate. And it was like lots of freaks, lots of, you know, drag queens, you know, drug dealers would be up and down Avenue A in the middle of the night. It was a crazy place. But part of that comes from its history as like music. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of, you know, you have the punk movement, which begins basically on Bowery, Manchester, England, but, you know, separately. And so all that music scene informed the style of person and the eclectic shops that would be there. So mm-hmm. even though that scene is gone, the new condos in the East Village really, really define that, and they try
they
to
inhabit it.
And they try to reflect that culture. Mm-hmm. Like if you go to the sales launches for any of the like buildings, like a few years ago, there was a building that launched on Bond Street, apparently right where Andy Warhol had lived, and the entire marketing was in like trying to sort of capitalize on this having been where Andy Warhol's factory, it wasn't even where the factory was, but it was where that eclectic artistic energy once was. So let's live here and let's, in a sort of vampiric way, sort of suck up that energy. And that continues to this day. You know, what I love about the West Village is that the West Village is the most expensive, most desirable, most like upscale place as a destination. And the reason is because its provenance was the Beats in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Like the West Village was a crazy place in the 50s and the 60s. And then, of course, the gay rights liberation movement starts in 69. And the West Village, when I moved to the city, was like the upscale, you know, gay neighborhood. Now it's just upscale. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very foreign. And there's no
trace. There's so much history.
But there's no trace of a lot of that history. There's some. And the sum is partially what keeps everything vibrant. You know, and that's in perpetuity. So follow me here. If you have a building that feels like it could have been around at that time, then I think people really respond to it.
Yeah, like, they get attached to it.
In a good way.
Right.
Like, why don't you want to have an emotionally positive relationship with your real estate, as it turns out to be an asset, but it's also where you're raising your kids?
Of course. And you live there every day. It affects
rubbing
your
nose on the carpet.
Right, you know? Or you're dragging your balls or whatever. Right? You need to like it.
Some of us have to drag our balls when we're allowed to breathe. But when we can't breathe, it's hard to drag your balls.
Dragging their testicles on the floor.
Labia. Oh, my God. Labia. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That's a good one, Jason.
Remember the tick that got on your friend's labia?
Oh, my God. Okay. So
I think that's where I reiterate that I'm gay.
Yeah.
I
mean, Jason doesn't want to know about labia.
Can we talk about sex
Jason
at some point?
Jason has no interest in anybody's labia.
No, he doesn't.
Okay. Well, unless we're talking about a surrogate.
If something shoots out of your vagina, you're going to worry about it.
That is totally true. Anything that comes out that breathes, you worry about.
Or okay, even so if it doesn't breathe.
Before we let you go, I'm going to.
Wait, I wanted to talk about something. Okay, what was your topic? Because I just wanted to.
Okay.
I wanted to talk to you about the most dangerous celebrities online. There was this McAfee released. A list of the most dangerous celebrities on the internet for 2019. Did I say nine? No, 2019. And like who's attached to viruses and malware and stuff like that. I guess like if people, you know, like clickbait. So I just thought that was so interesting.
Who's on the list?
So James Corden, Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones. So random. Jackie Chan.
What do they define as dangerous? Like, what's the criteria?
If, like, say there's a picture of you, and I go click on it, and then there's, like, a virus attached to whatever the picture was or whatever, that kind of thing. It's just, like, there are people that they're using.
You're saying Kourtney Kardashian has internet venereal?
Yeah, she has internet VD. Hmm. She does. Babe, you didn't make that list. Just saying.
I don't have internet VD. That's good news.
You just have...
I got a breathing problem. I have a deviated septum, probably, but I don't have internet.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, there's another cute story that made me think of you. Because you exercise a lot. And now we know you eat breakfast because you're eating a banana and a smoothie. So I was reading a story that there's a debate now. You know, science and medicine switches the story every, like, there's cycles with that information too, like, oh, cholesterol is good, cholesterol is bad, whatever. So now they're debating whether it's makes more sense to exercise before you eat breakfast or after you eat breakfast. So supposedly pre-breakfast exercise is better for you, and it like balances your insulin. And what do you guys, or you could just take my route and just don't exercise.
I'm a yoga practitioner where it is considered anathema to eat anything before you exercise, and I don't think I've had any food before exercising in like 8 years since I started the practice, and I can't even eat in the mornings anymore unless I've exercised.
Right, so you have trained yourself.
No, I'm telling you, it feels natural to me.
But like, what about even a coffee? Do you hear this?
Am I still breathing? Okay, I'm moving the phone away.
Maybe this is... Listen, this is my first time on this podcast. I don't know what his behavior is like when he's normally calling in outside.
No,
maybe this is really entertaining to him, and he's just really responding with some heavy breathing. Because,
the point is I'm breathing heavy right now, but I breathe heavier in studio. It's just that Neil has my mic muted, but it's fine. You guys are beating up on me. It's fine.
When do I mute you?
I love you both.
Oh my God, Uncle Neil. Uncle Neil doesn't mute you.
No, Uncle Neil. The other thing is the kid that you're sitting next to, Jason, this kid is like 500 years old. I mean, did you listen to the introduction? Okay, it's like melodies from like Tony Orlando and Don and shit
Uncle
like that.
Neil.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like especially amusing.
By the way, that was my first concert. I'm not lying.
What was your first concert?
Tony Orlando and Don.
Thanks, Mom.
You know what I'm saying? He's 23 years old, but he literally is like an ancient fossil. I've never seen anything like it. He's like a fossilized figure from like the 1950s. That's fine.
That's interesting because he doesn't look old enough to have gone to college yet.
Isn't he look so young? Whenever I talk to him,
he should grow the beard again.
He's a sweet-looking 16-year-old man.
Right?
Boy.
Man-child. Man,
boy.
Man-child.
Baby, I'm going to let you wrap this with Jason because I've got to get to this breakfast here.
Okay, yeah, we're going to wrap it up. Don't leave us.
We're not going to talk about the house censoring Adam Schiff. This is what I came on to
I know.
To hear.
Oh, my God, we're going to have to have you back. We're going to have you
back. That was ridiculous. I mean, by the way, you know, I think Adam Schiff made one tactical mistake, which was the improvisation of the dialogue, which of course Trump is lynching his entire life on, but they've got him so badly. Yeah, but I just want to let you know how lawless the country has become. If the Democrats did not win the House in November of 2018, there would be no impeachment inquiry. They would let him do whatever he wants to do, and so the moral test of the Republican Party in terms of character and integrity and whether or not we are a country of laws above humans, the Republican Party circa 2019 has failed that test.
Yep. But there are many other conservatives that are starting to speak like you who are trying to take back the conservative movement. And as a liberal, you know, I don't even think I should promote such a thing. But the very nature of honest discourse is something that I think a lot of conservatives are hoping to get back and to stop talking about crime and to talk about policy. I mean, let's fight about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's what I would say to my liberal friends, though. You have no idea. We do so much better when we have two parties and there is that discourse and there is that concession and is that, like, ability to pull things together into the middle. One-party systems, they don't do well, whether it's communist China, Venezuela, Mexico. Ultimately, one-party systems only have a 70-year life expectancy if you look at them. Think of communist Russia or the Mexican government, or I was in Malaysia, 62 years of one-party rule. It switched over, was a disaster. So you got to have a two-party system, or more than two parties, but you have to have some kind of rigorous debate in the system. Otherwise,
I agree with that. But, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of pundits got wrong in this, you know, cycle is comparing Trump's behavior to authoritarian regimes. Now, obviously, in effect, it's how things are getting done. But he doesn't function as an authoritarian. He's functioning as a criminal covering up for crimes. That's all it is. Like, you know, so I think it'll be really, really... Deirdre and I were just speaking about this before the cast started. It's like we're so looking forward to the time when politics is like part of the cycle, but, you know, we can get about our lives. You know, we don't need to look for scandals every
hour. Trump's got to go for that to happen. And
you know
and
who's
got
to go?
Happens,
you got to go. You have to go shower.
All right. I'm going to let you guys finish this, but here's what I'll say, Jace. We're coming to buy an apartment from you, okay? Because when Deirdre runs for mayor, we're going to need a residency requirement. So we're coming to buy an apartment from you, okay?
I'm a fan on all counts.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, thank you for being here with us. And I wanted everybody to check out your website. Tell them the name of your website. It's
lanyardgrandelli.com.
Right? Okay.
Spelled exactly as you would
as
think.
As it sounds.
Correct.
And you're definitely involved and emotionally invested in your client. So I suggest you guys look him up if you're looking to buy something or sell something. All right, so it's Tuesday. We'll see you next Tuesday. Hopefully I'll be in studio. I think Anthony's not going to be here again, but I'll be here. And until then, check us out online. See you later.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.